The formidable enemy.
The formidable enemy.
Enam. This mind. Tat.
That.
That.
Adabravirjam.
Very, very powerful.
Upekshaya.
By neglecting.
Adyeditam.
Unnecessarily increased in power.
Apramataha.
One who is without illusion.
Guruho.
Of the spiritual master.
Harehe.
Of the supreme personality of Godhead.
Charana.
Of the lotus feet.
Upasana
astraha. Applying the weapon of worshipping.
Jahi.
Conquer.
Jalikam.
False.
Swayam.
Personally.
Atmamocham.
Which covers the constitutional position. Of the living entity. Translation. This uncontrolled mind is the greatest enemy of the living entity. That's an echo. If one neglects it or gives it a chance, it will grow more and more powerful and will become victorious. Although it is not factual, it is very strong. It covers the constitutional position of the soul. O King, please try to conquer the mind by the weapon of service to the lotus feet of the spiritual master and of the supreme personality of Godhead. Do this with great care. You can repeat.
This uncontrolled mind
is the greatest enemy
of the living entity.
If one neglects it
or gives it a chance,
it will grow more and more powerful.
And will become victorious.
Although it is not factual,
it is very strong.
It covers the constitutional position of the soul. O King, please try to conquer this mind
by the weapon of service
to the lotus feet of the spiritual master
and of the supreme personality of Godhead.
Do this with great care.
So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
There is one easy weapon with which the mind can be conquered. Neglect. The mind is always telling us to do this or that. Therefore, we should be very expert in disobeying the mind's orders. Gradually, the mind should be trained to obey the orders of the soul. It is not that one should obey the orders of the mind. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say that to control the mind, one should beat it with shoes many times just after awakening, and again before going to sleep. In this way, one can control the mind. This is the instruction of all the Shastras. If one does not do so, one is doomed to follow the dictations of the mind. Another bona fide process is to abide strictly by the orders of the spiritual master and engage in the Lord's service. Then the mind will be automatically controlled. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has instructed Srila Rupa Goswami, Brahmanda Brahmate Kona Bhagavan Ji Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Vakti Lata Pish.
When one receives the seed of devotional service by the mercy of the Guru and Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one's real life begins. If one abides by the orders of the spiritual master, by the grace of Krishna, he is freed from service to the mind.
Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 5th canto, 11th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Jadabharata Instructs King Rahugana. Okay.
Vatrivyam enam taradabravirjam Upekshaya jiditam apramata, guror harescharanopasanastro,
Jati Vyalikam Swayamatma Mosham.
So, Om Ganat Timidandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Meditam Gena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
So, what is the process by which the mind gets more and more powerful? That's described in the Gita. The process is what? Jayato Vishekha Pumsa Sangosteshu Vijayate. Sangat Sanjayate Kama Kama Krodha Vijayate. Kama Krodha Vijayate. Krodha Bhavati Samoha. Samoha Smriti Ve Brahma Smriti Brahmsha Nashtabudir Nashtabudhi Vinashyati. Right? Famous verse. So, basically it means you begin to contemplate something that is a sense object. That's why in the beginning stage of devotional service, one really has to stay away from their sense objects. There has to be some even artificial separation from the sense objects. Just like it's stated, Balavan Indriya Gramo Vidvan Eva Hi Karshati. You know that? That the senses are very strong, that they can, even with an intelligent vidvan, someone who's full of vidya, van means full, like Bhagavan, vidya, vidvan, ivahikarshati. So even if someone is very intelligent, you know, full of knowledge, the senses can be, you know, stolen away, the mind can be stolen away when one comes in contact with the sense object. And specifically, what's mentioned in this particular verse is the sense object of the opposite sex. You know. And of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave that particular example too. He said, of course, he's God and he doesn't have any of these problems that conditioned souls have, but he said that even if he even sees the statue of a lady, he feels changes in the body. And of course, he doesn't. I mean, obviously. And he was referring, in this particular part of the Bhagavatam, he's referring to the interactions between Ramananda Roy and the Devidasis. You understand? Ramananda Roy would take the Devidasis and show them how to dress. He would decorate their bodies, bathe them, you know. And to even think about that is, you can't even think about it, you know, how some man could do that. And the reason he could do that is because he was fully identifying with his spiritual form, that of Vishakha. You understand? Ramananda Roy is Vishakha. And Swarup Damodar, he's Lalita. So Lalita Vishakha, they were always with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna in the mood of Radharani. So he could do that. But Lord Chaitanya said that this is quite dangerous for anyone else. No one should imitate this particular thing. So the point is we have to be very, very careful to not put ourselves in contact with the sense objects that we could be disturbed by. For example, let's say someone before they joined the Krishna consciousness movement was a drunkard. You know, they like liquor. I don't know how they would like liquor, but that's, it's horrible, isn't it? I mean, just like yesterday, we were close to the French Quarter in the park, and we walked close to someone who had been drinking liquor, right? And just the smell of it, you know, I almost wanted to run and vomit. But one can become addicted to it, to anything, if they do it enough times. Or, for example, the first time they drink liquor, it's not attractive, but they, after a while, it becomes attractive to them. That's another point. It's just so abominable. But if one associates with people who drink liquor, especially if one has a proclivity, then they can easily fall down from the devotional path if they have that particular propensity. And of course, you shouldn't think that you couldn't develop that propensity, because if you do something enough times, you become habituated to it, addicted to it. And I've seen that. You know, there's gambling addictions, there's liquor addictions, there's drug addictions, sexual addictions, you know, pornography. There's so many different types of addictions. And people do so many abominable things in the names of the addictions. Just like if you walk here in New Orleans, you'll see people eating these little crawfish, right? Yuck. It is so disgusting, isn't it? They crack them open, isn't it? They have a little nutcracker and they crack it open. I see the tables are full of these things. And people are selling them. You know, we're not allowed to have a nice tent to give out prasadam, but everybody who's having these little things, you know, these fish things, they're allowed to have tents and give out all sorts of abominable things. Prabhupada said, the things like this, the seafood, like lobsters and things, he said it's like eating pus. This is Prabhupada's quote. Don't blame me for it. Prabhupada said it's like pus. You know, in other words, you open up a lobster. Those are the animals with the exoskeletons. You know what an exoskeleton is? That means a skeleton on the outside instead of on the inside. So, anyway, so one contemplates things, and after a while, guess what? You get attached to them. Jayato vishikak pumsam, vishya, the sense object, pumsam, the person. Sangos teshu pajayate, he gets attached to them. Hey, sounds good to me. Maybe I should do that. I mean, just even myself, looking at the news, then you see some advertisement, because I guess I was looking at the news on the internet, you know, what's the latest with Bin Laden. And then you see some advertisement, watch this movie. And, you know, it shows, there was one, anyway, I won't tell you what the name of the movie was, but it was just an advertisement that pops up in the middle and you're watching it, and you're thinking, wow, can't wait till that movie comes out. I should watch it. So even the mind, you understand, the mind can really be taken away in a second like that, and you get attached to it. Of course, I caught myself and said, hey, what are you doing? You're not supposed to be seeing this stupid movie about violence and everything. So, sangos teshu pajayate, sangat sanjayate kama, and then you really want it. Of course, that's also equated with the stages of the mind, which is thinking, feeling, willing. You understand? You think of something, and then you think of it more, you meditate, contemplate on it, and then you actually feel it. Like the example of food. Let's say if I say right now, I mean, what is your favorite preparation? Sweet rice? You like sweet rice? Pizza? All right, pizza. If I say pizza, very nice pizza with cheese on it and olives. You know, everyone here likes olives. I can tell because they give them to me every night. But you must have like big jars of them in the kitchen. So pizza with olives on it, you know, vegetarian, with nice spices. That's thinking. But what do you feel? Don't you start to salivate a little bit when I talk about it? It's almost like the Pavlovian dogs. I don't know if you've heard about that before. That they would ring a bell. You ever hear? Anyone's heard of that experiment? They trained up dogs that they would feed them whenever they rang a bell. So after a while, they didn't feed them, and they just rang the bell, and the dogs would start to salivate. So it's like that. So thinking, I gave you some sense object, food that you really like. Most people like pizza, right? And then you actually start, you feel yourself start to salivate. Mm. Even in class, it's happening. Mm. And then it grows and grows. And if I kept talking about it, you would definitely, like after class, make some plans to cook it tonight. Right? You'd say to the cook that, you know, let's get some cheese and make some nice pizza for the devotees. So there's a thinking, feeling, willing, right? You see, practically, I can even start this whole chain right here in class, and you'll all be absorbed in this chain of thinking, feeling, willing. Interesting, isn't it? Just by exposing yourself enough times to something, the thought to pizza, 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 you know. You know, maybe you'll even make it for breakfast if I say it enough times. So that's a practical exhibition. You understand? It's a practical laboratory exhibition of this principle of thinking, of becoming attached and then becoming lusty. And then, after you become lusty of this pizza, if I say, you can't have it, I forbid you, I'm giving Bhagavatam class, Devotees are prohibited from having pizza. It's one of the rules and regulations in Krishna consciousness. So there's two things. One is you'll sneak and do it anyway. And the other one is you'll get angry at me, right? What is he, you know, just some puffed up sannyasi, agitated, right? Isn't that, immediately you'll respond like that. He's agitated. Just because he has to follow a vegan diet, he wants everybody to be the same. Just like Prabhupada, in the beginning days of the movement, Prabhupada had this big jar of globjamins. He called them ISKCON bullets. And there was one devotee, well, it was Kirtananda, and he said, Prabhupada, devotees should just have one a day. And Prabhupada said, you can have one a day. Everybody else can have as many as they want. Because he was so agitated. So sometimes if someone restricts our sense gratification, we get angry at them. It's just normal. It's a natural thing. It's a natural thing, you know, angry. You know, why can't I eat? And I know sometimes when I'm speaking, even to different godbrothers, if I'm going to request them for something like money or something like that, I make sure they eat first. And that's a normal thing when you're actually asking people for donations. You give them food first. You don't ask people on a hungry stomach. They could get angry at you. You know, when's dinner? And sometimes even I'm giving, you know, you give classes on Sunday feast, people are just looking at their watches and looking angry at me. Like that. You know, when is this rascal going to stop? So that's, isn't it? So you get attached, you get lusty, and then anger comes to that. And then when anger, anyway, you know what happens with anger, samoha. So then you get illusioned, moha. Samoha, Prabhupada would translate that as perfect illusion. Which you go, bewilderment, which is actually more than illusion. You know, it's one thing to be an illusion. You see a mirage in the desert, you know, that's one thing. But bewilderment is more than just illusion, right? Bewilderment is just like, and then you forget that you're supposed to be Krishna conscious. Smriti Brahma. You know, you actually forget. It's lost. Smriti Brahma Shad. And then once you do that, then you're lost. Vinashati. So this is actually how the mind entraps us. So it's better just to take care of it in the beginning, not come in contact with your sense object, or if a sense object happens to walk into your vision, you close your eyes or something like that. And you see some instances of people really losing everything, like a Jamil. What happened to a Jamil? A Jamil was a nice Brahmin. And he just like looked out one day. He was getting something for his spiritual master. And he looked out and he saw this, you know, prostitute and, you know, guy embracing each other. He just looked. And he just contemplated and became so strong that he couldn't restrain himself. And finally he ended up, you know, marrying the prostitute, getting rid of his nice chaste wife, right? His nice chaste wife, and then what else did he get rid of? You know, his father was there, and he just mistreated his father, took all the money, gave it all to the prostitute. Everything was finished. Fortunately, by the mercy of Krishna, you know, he was saved at the holy names. He was saved at the end. But his whole life was finished just because of a moment's inattention. It was just one moment. And he contemplated, finished. And we see a similar situation. Another example that comes to mind is Viswamitra Muni. Viswamitra Muni wanted to become a Brahmarshi. And so, I mean, I'm not going to tell the whole story. But he had instances where he just contemplated something and just everything was finished. He was meditating in the forest and Menaka came, right? And he contemplated her. He just heard her. Prabhupada said he just heard her ankle bells. Just contemplated the sound of the ankle bells, was it? You know, I can't make a sound. Something like that. And then that was it. All of a sudden, you know, he was married or having a relationship, and then Shakuntala was born as a result. Actually, the word Shakuntala means someone who is taken care of by the vultures.
Yeah.
It's interesting. So, and then when he realized what had happened, he just got out of there. He and she left too, and the poor little Shakuntala was left in the forest to be taken care of the vultures, and later by Kanva Muni. Kanva Muni took care of Shakuntala, and of course she was, later on she was the mother of the great King Bart, but that's a different story. So, and then later on in his meditation, he became attached to Ramba, but he didn't have a relationship with her, the anger came out. And what do? He burnt her to ashes. So you see, just a little inattention, and then, you know, and we're talking about Vishwamitra Muni, like thousands of years of austerity, just thrown to the wind, you know, just finished. Another time he was meditating under a tree, the Prabhupada told this story. And as he was meditating, a bird did what birds do. You know, birds aren't toilet trained. So the bird just said, a little bird dropping fell on his head. And what did he do? He burnt the bird to ashes. You know, anger. And then he lost more, thousands of years of austerity. You know, the story of Vishwamitra Muni is he keeps losing all these years and years and years of austerities just because he succumbs to anger or succumbs to lust or whatever. You know, just a little inattention. Of course, eventually he achieves perfection when he's tested because he undergoes a long fast, and then the demigods come and they ask for food, you know, the food he's supposed to eat, and he gladly gives it to them without getting angry. You know, that would be interesting. We can try that with any of you. When you're sitting down for a plate of prasadam, I just grab your plate from you and see what happens. See if you're actually Brahmarshis or Brahmarishis. I don't think it would. I think it would be dangerous even for me to do. So you see so many instances. I mean, we have so many practical examples in our own lives too where we just lose it. We become angry, we become lusty. We forget about our own spiritual progress by giving in to the mind. So the point that Prabhupada is making here is how to conquer the mind, and the verse is making too. Of course, you have the mechanical process of, you know, hitting your head with your shoes every morning. If you go to Radhakund, the Swananda Shukada Kunja, which is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house there at Radhakund. Anyone's ever been there? You've been there. And in that house, there's the Rupa Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. They have his shoes and his cane. And if you give the pujari a nice donation, he'll hit you on the head with the cane and the shoes. Has anyone ever had that happen to them? You've had that. He'll take the cane out and go whack, whack, whack. Big Paul, you've had that? Experience that?
I was there. And
in the room in the back. There's a glass case that has one glass case that has the shoes and another long glass case that has the cane, right? You see that? And then he just goes like that. So, I mean, that's one process. But simply beating the mind, I mean, of course he's speaking not literally but figuratively. We beat the mind with the holy names, you know. It's not that we should literally take our shoes out and every morning I whack, whack. I've seen brahmacharis do that. It just doesn't work. You just get a concussion at the end of the day. I'm thinking of Maya. Actually, the Buddhists do that sometimes. You know, when they're training up their disciples, they ask you to sit. And if you start moving, it's called Roshi, not Rishi. Roshi, that's... Anyway, that's similar to Rishi. It's interesting. Nepal, it's called Pali. Pali is a language like Sanskrit, but it's like Sanskrit spoken with a Brooklyn accent. It is. I mean, it's actually the same language, but it's spoken with a I don't know if any of you know what a Brooklyn accent is. You know, it would be instead of sadhana, it would be sadhana, something like that. So, I think you probably know what a Brooklyn accent is. So it's Sanskrit pronounced a little bit different, Pali. So the Roshis, who are actually Rishis in Sanskrit, they would go around while the people are meditating. If the people's, you know, look, their eyes move the wrong direction, they whack. Has anyone heard about that before? That's what they do. You know, that you have to sit for hours trying to meditate on nothing.
Which, asleep,
yeah, they whack you if you start, you go. We should do that during Bhagavatam class, you know. Someone falls asleep, whack. No, nobody will come. Well, we used to do in Los Angeles is we had one of those spray bottles, yeah. It's like they use for Tulsi Devi. And someone, you know, someone was falling asleep, and someone in class was assigned to go up to them and go, shh, shh, shh. So literally we're not supposed to start whacking people. It's not a very good process. But figuratively, we use the holy names. But even, let's say, a very effective method, perhaps as Prabhupada comments here, the most effective method is to always think of what would please the spiritual master and do those things, and what would displease him, and don't do those things. Or as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, the six surrendering processes is to accept everything favorable and reject everything unfavorable. Those are the first two. And, you know, the other ones are always understanding the Lord is protecting you, maintaining you, to be meek and humble and have no separate interests other than the interests of the Lord. Those are the six principles that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives us to surrender. Sharanagati. So the first is to accept everything favorable. So accept everything favorable and unfavorable can be very much connected with the Guru, that we accept what would please him. So, in other words, we integrate the Guru into our consciousness, or the service of the Guru into our consciousness. Of course, the Guru is a representative of the super soul. So we're thinking, you know, whatever we come across during the day, would this please Prabhupada? I mean, and there are things that attract us, too, and we just have to reject them. I mean, I'll give you an example. My own life, because it's good to give an example from one's own life. Like, my whole life, I've always wanted to go hang gliding. You know what hang gliding is? Hang gliding means when you get, it's like a kite, and you attach yourself to a kite, and you go off a mountain, and you float in the, and you float on the updrafts, you know, the warm updrafts. My whole life I wanted to do that. So one day I was driving in Serbia, and driving with a devotee, and I saw there was this hang gliding thing, and it's not so expensive there. And so I was thinking, wow, should I? Nobody, you know, only my disciples here. He'll be happy to go with me. He'll be happy. Then I thought, Prabhupada would not be pleased. So then immediately, didn't do it. Even though I really wanted to do it. I wanted to do it my whole life. I wanted to go hang gliding. Also, I was thinking, if I got hurt, how would I explain it to the devotees? I could say I was preaching, you know, dancing enthusiastically or something. But the point, no, the real point was, I was thinking, this would not please Prabhupada. And my identity, this involves developing an identity as a servant of your spiritual master. We were talking the other day about the qualities of one who is a guru. The first point is samitpani, someone who is a servant. Fetching water for the guru. So, therefore, I said no. And this is how we should react with things, too. Everything we come across, will this please Prabhupada? I mean, just like, even on the daily schedule, like in the morning, like it's, you know, 3:30 in the morning, we would like to sleep. Everybody would like to sleep more, right? I mean, I don't think it's unusual to want to sleep more in the morning, you know. Everybody else is sleeping, it's quiet, it's peaceful, you're tucked into bed, nice warm bed. But then you think, you know, but I'm a servant of Prabhupada, that's my identity. And that way you control the mind, because the mind wants to sleep. Practically everybody's mind wants to sleep. And then you're able to conquer it very easy. It's a very easy process. That's exactly what Prabhupada says here in the verse. Or the purport, I'm sorry. If one abides by the orders of the spiritual master, by the grace of Krishna, he is freed from service to the mind. And elsewhere he says, another bona fide process is to abide strictly by the orders of the spiritual master, engage in the Lord's service, then the mind will be automatically controlled. So in other words, even if the guru is not there, one has to sort of internalize or understand the guru so well, be a first-class servant, because a first-class servant knows the intention of the master, so that one's always acting even without being told. You know, sometimes one can say, well, Prabhupada never told me not to go hang gliding. Isn't it? You understand? No, where's in Prabhupada's books that you shouldn't go hang gliding? Actually, it says frivolous sports. But anyway, it's not a sport. You know, I'm not fighting anybody. He doesn't say that. You know, you can't cover all the different ways you can be in Maya in the books. You just can't. So you have to really understand the intention behind the instructions, rather than just like, it doesn't say, you know, read the fine print. Wow, it never says this. You know, you're looking for loopholes, you know, like a good lawyer looking, you know, reading Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada said, never said we can't surf or hang glide or what else? Bungee jump. So I can do it. Anything that's not illegal, you can do. Just like people who are interested in taking drugs, you know, they're always looking for some drug that's legal that has the same effect as marijuana, right? You know, they start smoking banana peels. This is 1960, you remember that? They're smoking banana peels, they were taking nutmeg. Something, you know, but they didn't understand the intention. You know, there's the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. So we sometimes just take the letter of Prabhupada's instructions rather than the spirit of Prabhupada's instructions. Do you understand the difference? Yes, and that's Nimagraha. The letter. Oh yeah, Prabhupada didn't ever say that. Great. Prabhupada never said not to watch video. He said don't go to the movies, but he never said don't go to the video store. He never said don't go on the internet and watch videos on the internet. He said don't go to the theater. You know, so you know, we're expert like lawyers, you know, looking for the loopholes. But we have to understand, to really control the mind, you have to understand the intention. Just like it's described about Rupa Goswami. Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam. Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. He understood the mind of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Right? Mano Vishtam. That, therefore, we are Rupa Goswamis because he understood the intention of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he was able to elaborate on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions. He, Sanatana Goswami, of course, and the other Goswamis. Not that they just were very literal, but they understood the intention. So if we understand the intention of Srila Prabhupada, then we can always, and we understand that we're servants of Prabhupada, then the mind can always be controlled. It's an easy process. So any questions or comments?
Mark, I have a question.
Yeah.
You just mentioned how one should identify oneself as being a servant of one's spiritual master.
Yeah.
And you cited an example, it's 3:30 in the morning, I want to sleep, my mind is dictating my physics, but if I identify myself as a servant, my spiritual master will try to rise and etc. Objectively, everyone in ISKCON, all over, more or less consider themselves servants of Srila Prabhupada, followers of Srila Prabhupada.
Do they really?
Ideally.
Yeah, ideally. I mean, they'll say it, they'll say it.
Right.
But do they really internally, live in a very deep way?
Right, and this is my question. It sometimes appears to be a fine line, because one may justify, well, I'm not rising early and executing my sadhana early, because I'm serving Srila Prabhupada throughout the day And sometimes it becomes very hectic, or my schedule becomes irregular on account of service to the temple, service to Sri Srila Prabhupada. So is there actually a fine line, or
well, you have to understand
justification, or
we can justify anything. But there's priorities that Prabhupada gave. First of all, Prabhupada said, first of all, you have to become Krishna conscious. You know, so the sadhana is to make us Krishna conscious so we can serve Prabhupada. So, yeah, I've seen devotees not chant because they're distributing Prabhupada's books. You know, there was one famous devotee many years ago, I won't mention his name. He was, like, in charge of, you know, BBT and distributing Prabhupada's books, but he didn't chant his japa. You know, so, you know, everybody was thinking, you know, Prabhupada's gonna save him and everything. But he eventually, you know, he's coming back. But anyway, so he left the society because he didn't understand the priorities that Prabhupada gave. You can't really take Prabhupada's mood out of context. You have to understand his priority. First of all, he wanted us to become Krishna conscious. First of all, he said the books are for us to read more, first of all, and then secondly, to distribute. You know, if you don't read the books, you won't understand Prabhupada. You know, and people make a show sometimes of being Prabhupada and Nugas. I mean, for example, let's say the Ritviks. You know, I have no problem if someone believes in the Ritvik philosophy, but if in the process they're committing offenses against people who don't accept it, that's very displeasing to Prabhupada. Because Prabhupada gave the example of the disciples who were massaging the spiritual master, and what did they do while they were massaging the guru? Does anyone know that story? They were fighting with each other, and they were pulling the guru's body apart. You understand? No, I want to massage this leg. No, I want to massage the leg. And so, you know, they're having a tug of war with the guru's legs. Prabhupada gave that example. So, yeah, the desire. Let's say someone had, you know, they want to be Ritvik for some reason or other, and like I said, I'm not condemning anyone for that. But the idea of offending others in the name of that, that is displeasing to Prabhupada. So there's a fine line. You know, if they're thinking they want to serve Prabhupada, I mean, somehow or other in their mind, even though it's against Shastra, you know, Hare Krishna, it's a free world. But they're displeasing Prabhupada. By the fighting and by the offending Vaishnavas. You know, so that's the point. You know, you can't, in the name of Prabhupada, displease Prabhupada. Would Prabhupada be happy with devotees fighting? I don't think so. With offending each other, I don't think so. So, you know, so it's really easy. It's actually easy to understand what pleases Prabhupada. You just have to read his books or hear from him. And I mean, you don't have to be a direct disciple. You can be a disciple of a disciple. It's not that hard to understand. It's like the devotees here who are sacrificing everything to maintain this temple and do the deity worship. That pleases Prabhupada. You know, it's very easy. I mean, just read a little bit. It doesn't take a Einstein to figure that out. So is that explain? So any other questions or comments? Yeah, Parijata.
Yeah. That verse could be also misinterpreted.
Yeah.
How could you elaborate on this? I never,
you know, fix your mind in Krishna. So, there's also, actually, there's real Krishna and there's Maya Krishna. You understand? Then we think we're thinking of Krishna because we basically, maybe not all of you, but speaking for myself, we're conditioned souls, and we have a tendency to make mistakes, don't we? And we could think that we're thinking of Krishna when we're not thinking of Krishna. In other words, sahaja, that's an example. You understand? The sahaja is think they're thinking of Krishna, but they're actually not thinking of Krishna. They're thinking of an illusory Krishna, which they're projecting on the screen of their minds. They're not thinking of the actual Krishna. There's Maya Krishna. This is like there's a Maya Sita. You know, Ravana, what did he do? He kidnapped not real Sita. He thought he had Sita, but he had Maya Sita. So we may think we have Krishna, but without Guru, we don't have Krishna. Without following strictly Guru's instructions, what we have is Maya Krishna. We think we're Krishna conscious. It's an illusion. Does that explain that? Anyway, it happens. Many people, you know, the sahajas think they're perfectly Krishna conscious as they put on their sari, the men putting on their saris and their lipstick, you know. They're pretty ugly gopis. I've seen them in Vrindavan, you know.
The
tea
stall.
What's that?
The tea stall.
Yeah, the tea stall. I mean, they come in with the lipstick and the jewelry, and I think, you know, if that's what the gopis look like, you know, we're in big trouble. You know, they think they're going to... Yeah, and they think they're Krishna conscious. And there's other deviant Vaishnava groups like that. The group that chants Nitya Gaur Radhe Shyam Hare Krishna Hare Ram. Charana Das Babaji. And they're right behind our Krishna Balaram Mandir. And in the guest house, right behind the guest house. And they chant all night long and it drives you crazy. I can't even stay in the guest house anymore because of that. You know, this thing goes all night long. Nitya Gaur Radhe Shyam Hare Krishna Hare Ram. Boom. Anyone's ever heard that? And they think they're Krishna conscious. But without connection, Prabhupada said, anyone who leaves the Krishna conscious movement, they're Krishna conscious just like an hallucination, living in an hallucination. So it's an hallucination. Basically, you have to go through Guru. Without Guru, nagati katopi. You know, there's no place where we are. We're not spiritually situated. So we really need that connection with the Guru in order to be connected to Krishna. The transparent via medium. I mean, I don't know any other way of becoming Krishna conscious for a conditioned soul. I mean, if you're not a conditioned soul, then you figure that out. But, you know, then you're already Krishna conscious. You don't have to come to the Krishna conscious movement because you're already Krishna conscious. You know, if you're one of Krishna's Nitya Parshadas, you know, eternal associates, my hat's off to you, or my seeker's off to you, or something. So, any other questions? I think we have to end because it's time for prasadam. Devotees will get angry because their minds are contemplating on the food. So, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, ki jai.